You are listening to Eastside Radio Podcast.
89.7 FM, Eastside Radio.
As you probably know, Monday Drive often features great achievements by members of our community, and I've got a ripper for you today. It was announced late last week that an Australian-built and operated Cube satellite has won the SmallSat Mission of the Year award at what has been described as the Space Oscars at a ceremony in Salt Lake City in Utah, in the United States. Waratah Seed was crowned the winner in a field of 10 missions, including finalists from NASA Goddard, the European Space Agency, Purdue University, NASA's Jet Propulsion Laboratory, and John Hopkins University. Waratah Seed is a Cube satellite, or CubeSat, with a diverse scientific and commercial payload backed by the New South Wales government, some commercial enterprises, and a consortium of universities led by the University of Sydney. It's Australia's first rideshare mission, flying an Australian-built CubeSat, which successfully deployed into sun-synchronous low Earth orbit from the SpaceX Transporter launch to a 513-kilometre altitude, circular sun-synchronous orbit. The consortium was led by Professor Eva Cairns from the University of Sydney School of Physics, and he joins me on the phone right now. Professor Cairns, welcome to Monday Drive.
Thank you very much, Alan. It's my pleasure to be with you.
Firstly, Professor Cairns, congratulations on this very significant win. You must be pretty proud of your team's efforts, and more particularly in the face of such a distinguished pool of competitors in such a prestigious competition.
Absolutely. We are, so to speak, over the moon, all of us.
Oh dear, we're in for that conversation.
Well, but you're right. It is really quite awesome achievement. It's a group of approximately 100 of us who've been working on the payloads and then on the satellite itself, with actually a much smaller team of about 3 or 4 working directly on the satellite most of the time. And to go up against groups with, hundreds of millions of dollar budgets is exceptional.
When you said hundreds, I counted up around about 70, and that was between the executive, postdoctoral researchers, investigators, advisory boards, students. It's an extraordinary number of people to pull together as one team to achieve something like that, isn't it?
It is, and we've done it by really trying to create a community where all of the payload teams are listened to, they're helped to develop their payloads further into being space qualified and to then work, and it's really paid dividends.
That's the team that you're referring to, but you yourself, you're the 2023 Australian Space Scientist of the Year, the 2021 Einstein Co-Lecturer, New South Wales branch of the Australian Institute of Physics, Professor in Space Physics at the University of Sydney, Director of CUAVA, which is the ARC Training Centre for CubeSats, UAVs and their applications. You're the Director of the Waratah Seed Rideshare Satellite Consortium. You're the Co-Chair of the Australian Space Research Conference and Chair of the Finance Committee for COSPAR. What did you do wrong to get the finance role in amongst all those exciting space roles?
Well, the finances are very interesting, and as you can imagine, finance is important for any spacecraft mission, whether it's Kuava or Waratah Seed.
Come on, you're just making excuses now.
So you never hear about that for the Avengers or the Fantastic Four, do you, Alan? That sort of CV is Avengers worthy.
I have our pet vet with us here today, Professor Cairns, and I wonder whether or not is there's any way you could put an animal in...
Dogs in space, Alan.
Is it up for consideration?
In space. Well, there's certainly been one already, of course, in space.
Indeed.
Laika. But she had a... She was very well loved by the people who trained her, got her ready for it, but she had a pretty horrifying end in space.
Nothing you could fix, Dr. Paul?
I don't think so.
Okay.
That wouldn't have been a soft landing.
No. Professor Cairns, tell us about Kuava, which is the Australian Research Council Training Centre for CubeSats, uncrewed aerial vehicles and their applications. What is it and what does it aim to do?
Well, it's a training centre for the Australian Research Council, and its primary focus is in training people for roles in the space sector. And so it's part of the Australian Research Council, but with a focus on training. That's the first goal. And then the second goal is to basically develop technologies that are suitable for going into space, whether those are satellite systems or whether they're actual instruments to measure the space environment or to look at Earth, for instance. And then the third goal is to look at applications, especially those that have benefit to humankind, whether that's commercial or whether it's defense/security or natural hazards, those types of things.
The first one of those you mentioned was a training ground. I wonder how many of the 100 people that you mentioned form part of your team have aspirations of getting into space themselves. Are they space scientists or are they just physicists? I shouldn't say just.
Well, actually, only a small fraction of our students and of our team are physicists. So for Kuava, its remit goes all across space engineering to space physics to geosciences and marine sciences, very broad. And we trained approximately 15 PhD and master's students and then a number of honors students and probably of order 50 undergraduate students in doing research projects related to this, but all across from soil moisture, from spectral measurements to, you know, making a data over power network to go into a satellite.
Right.
So very broad.
So when some, what is the criteria for acceptance of somebody into your team? The fact that they might want to get into space? Or the fact that they don't know what they want to do, but they're just clever?
We had very limited money. So we needed them to do a project that was related to one of our aims or sub-aims, or perhaps to come with their own project.
Come with their own project?
With own project. So one of my students, Naif Al-Salam, came from Canada and Saudi Arabia, and he came with his desire to develop a infrared imaging instrument to be able to look for methane, carbon dioxide, water vapor, and so on, you know, to do with mines, to do with pipelines, or just measuring the methane content of the atmosphere. And so that was his idea. That's what he wanted to do. And he had funding from the Saudi Arabian government. And so, you know, I very happily accepted him.
Oh, I bet you did.
because, you know, in many ways, you know, especially when you don't have quite enough money, you have to find, you know, clever ways to fund people, whether that's by using other scholarship schemes or, you know, partners' money or, you know, to do things.
So we've been
quite creative.
How did you get into it yourself?
Well, originally I was wanting to do quantum mechanics, in fact, as a as an aspiring PhD student, and I was told, this is approximately 1983, that quantum mechanics was really a dead field at the time. And so I said, well, I've all the professor of theoretical physics, and I was a theoretician mostly. Well, he was in space physics, Don Melrose, and so I followed him into this area of so-called plasma astrophysics, where you're looking at the plasma physics of plasmas in space and astrophysical systems. And I went to the United States on a postdoc eventually and lived there, and then came back as a space physicist. And then I found that, well, I helped, I led a national committee for space science, a decadal plan for Australian space science. And one of the goals in there was to actually have Australians doing small satellites. And no one was doing it. And so approximately 2012 or so, I said, look, no one's doing it. I'm going to have to put my money where my mouth is, and I'm going to have to start trying to do something myself. And so that's when I started to get into the small satellites business and actually putting things into space.
So everything, it seems, has a basis in money. And you've said your programs have got limited money. I wonder whether this win will put you in a better position to attract money to your projects.
Well, money is important, but it's not the only thing. You have to have desires and interests that transcend that, I think.
Well, you've got a team of 100 people with plenty of that, by the sounds of things.
We do have lots of interests. That is true. But you are right. We do hope that with the announcement of Waratah Seed being the global SmallSat mission of the year, that this will encourage Australian and other groups to work with us and to, in particular, help fund a future series of Waratah Seed projects, perhaps called Waratah Space.
Right. Well, let's talk about the Waratah Seed 1. It carried 9 scientific and commercial payloads, and it's been circling the Earth for around about a year and a couple of days now, right?
Yes, that's right. In fact, I think on the 16th, which is tomorrow, right, it will have gone. Sorry,
it was two days ago.
2 days ago.
Yep.
So relativity is dead, perhaps.
But we
have now gone 1 year in orbit. You're exactly right. 1 year and 1 day in orbit.
Right, right. Tell us what sort of devices it's carrying and what are they doing?
Well, so it's carrying 2 solar cell experiments. One of those is advanced silicon cells, a bit like the ones on our on our rooftops. Then it has one which is using perovskite as the active material to gather the photons.
Never heard of it.
And convert them in. I actually can't tell you what the chemical formula is.
It's an infinity stone, isn't it? It's a Marvel copyright.
Marvel's got that one.
Well, it is a wonderful. It involves various rare earths and then some more common minerals, but I actually don't remember which ones they are. So it's those two. Then we have a space age computer, so a high end processor for doing calculations in space. We have 2 biomaterials experiments. Basically, one of them is looking at bamboo and seeing if it stresses and if the stresses and strains on it in space rule it out from being a useful material to build a spacecraft out of.
Bamboo?
Wow.
Bamboo.
Well, it makes a lot of sense because it's strong, it's flexible when you want it to be.
Sustainable.
And of
Sustainable, and it burns. Oh, wait.
And it burns up as it comes into the atmosphere, and it doesn't give you metal ions high in the atmosphere. Yes, it'd give you carbon and CO2, but not, I believe, methane, for instance, which would be bad.
So tell us, how do you communicate with all these things that Waratah Seed 1 is carrying? How does it communicate to you?
Well, we have two radios on board. One of them works in the sort of UHF, VHF band. So those are at about 140 megahertz and 400 megahertz, so quite low frequencies. And then we have a so-called S-band radio, which is at about 2 gigahertz, 2.0 gigahertz. And that's the one that we use for downlinking our more significant amounts of data. We can get about a megabyte per second with that, whereas the UHF, VHF is something closer to 8 kilobytes per second.
That's pretty good when you consider it's 500 and something or other kilometers above us right now.
It is, and we basically have it coming above us twice a day, once at about 10:30 in the morning and once at about 10:30 at night. But the angle on the sky for it ranges from directly overhead to low on the horizon. And when it's low on the horizon, we get, you know, poor signals and can't communicate well. But basically once a day, we get communications with it.
Okay. I'm speaking with Professor Eva Cairns, who is the director of nearly everything to do with space. I think that probably covers it. Professor Cairns, I understand there's something of the order of 3,000 active satellites orbiting the Earth. What are they all doing?
Many of them are Starlink satellites. And then there are a few from OneWeb, for instance. And so those are all focused on basically internet services.
3,000?
Other community. Yes. Yes, unfortunately so.
Wow. That's how your GPS works, Alan. Mm, mm.
Yeah, the GPS are even further up. So most of these low Earth orbit ones are within less than 1,000 kilometers, whereas the GPS satellites are closer to 10,000 kilometers above us. And there's probably only of order, depends whose system you're talking about, but the Americans have of order, I think it's 30. And then there's the Chinese system, the European system, but those numbers are less than 100 in total.
Do your systems talk to the Chinese systems?
No, they don't. No. It would be, I mean, this field of inter-satellite communications is actually an interesting one for us, because it would be lovely if we could, instead of waiting to go overhead a given spot on Earth where our ground station is and have, you know, 10 minutes perhaps a day of communications, if instead we could send our signals to, you know, another satellite that would then send it to another one and then down to the ground somewhere else, we could get, you know, almost continuous data transits or data downlinking, and that would be wonderful.
Are you mates with Elon Musk?
No.
He's losing mates rapidly, isn't he?
But wouldn't it be useful for you to be? I mean, he's got the money, he's got the satellites, he's got everything you need. He'd be a great friend.
That is true. And so one of the projects that we want to pursue is actually linking to, for instance, even if it's not Elon Musk and Starlink, it might be to, for instance, the NBN's SkyMaster satellites or OneWeb satellites, so as to try and get, you know, more continuous downlinking of data and commanding of our spacecraft.
Right.
So you're quite right. That is something we want to do.
Talking about things you want to do, what's next? What will follow Waratah Seed 1? Oh, wait, let me guess. Waratah Seed 2?
That was what we might hope.
what will it carry?
Well, we don't know yet. We haven't yet gone out to ask explicitly for partners and associated funding. But yeah, we really want to have a series of satellites like Waratah Seed that we might call Waratah.space. And basically, we want them to be a pipeline for payloads to orbit for benefit, whether commercial or national or public good. And we want that to be, you know, yearly. So there's a reliable pipeline for Australian and, in fact, international payloads to get into space and develop space heritage, be ready to provide, and then to actually operate in space and give us those data and services that we increasingly need down here on Earth.
Well, from those of us who are down here on Earth, and those particularly here at Eastside Radio, we wish you all the very best for your endeavours. Professor Eva Cairns, thank you so much for joining us here today on Monday Drive.
Thank you very much, Alan. Thank you.
You have been listening to Eastside Radio Podcast. For selections of more enjoyable content like this, visit our website, eastsidefm.org, and click on Podcast.